Good evening and welcome back to Sports Talk ATL. I am Chase Earl, joined by Alex Lord. We got a really good show for you on a Friday. Mark Zeno is going to join the show. We're going to talk about the Raheem Morris hire. He was here talking about Bill Belichick and Raheem Morris last week. Now he is the head coach. We're going to discuss it. There's a crazy Alabama gambling story that I'm sure a lot of you have heard, but if you haven't, I am going to tell it to you. I promise you, stay till the end of the show because it is worth your time. We're also going to talk about Trae Young being snubbed from the All-Star game and kind of his future in Atlanta because it seems cloudy at best. But we are going to begin the show with a little MLB talk. We had a block. It's been a slow off season in the MLB. I think measures need to be taken to speed this process up. But blockbuster trade yesterday, Corbin Burns is going to the Orioles. Corbin Burns, the guy that we talked about going to the Braves potentially earlier in the offseason. Obviously, we pivoted to Chris Sale, likely because of the asking price. And, you know, who the Brewers got in return? They got a shortstop, a MLB-ready shortstop. Think kind of like Vaughn Grissom. I know Vaughn Grissom is a shortstop, but very similar piece in terms of where they are at in their careers, just different positions. And they got a left-handed pitcher in D.L. Hall, who is also major league ready, has a lot of good stuff, pitching the bullpen for the Orioles. So, but I would put him in the same category kind of as a high upside pitcher, kind of like A.J. Smith-Shawver. So I just want to put that out there for Braves fans. I want to shout out to the Orioles for finally making a move. They get a new owner, and the next day they swing a trade for Corbin Burns. That's just sick. It's sick for the Orioles. I'm really happy. They've never spent money. Finally looks like that's going to change. The reason it made sense for the Orioles, though, they had all these prospects. Braves did not. They got a new ownership that wants to put an emphasis on winning. I think they're going to make a hard, hard run at keeping Corbin Burns, give them basically whatever they want after making this trade. And I don't think the Braves are ever going to do this. So that's why giving up a guy like Vaughn Grissom and A.J. Smith-Shawver for 1 year of Corbin Burns does not make sense for the Braves, makes a lot of sense for the Orioles.
Yeah, it also included a first-round pick or a first-round draft pick.
Essentially,
basically. Picks. And I do think is important in all of this, two things I did want to address. One, Alex Anthopoulos has been one of the best in the business at not only identifying talent, but which talent to hold on and which talent to kind of, you know, include in these trades. So the fact of the matter is, and this goes for Dylan Cease as well as Corbin Burns, that he was clearly unwilling to include A.J. Smith-Shawver / Hurston Waldrop in these trades, whereas Vaughn Grissom didn't really have an immediate role with the Atlanta Braves. So it's very clear that Alex Anthopoulos and company are very, very high on those two guys. I did want to point to kind of, like you said, they got an MLB shortstop in Milwaukee, I'm saying. Willy Adames, if you want to talk about one position the Braves do not have locked up for the foreseeable future, it's shortstop. Willy Adames entering the last year of his contract feels like it's a fit. There's going to be noise around it. Do I expect the Braves to actually, you know, get that trade? I don't, but it is worth talking about.
Yeah, I think the Braves are pretty much done this offseason simply because I think they're kind of at capacity given that they're going to have to make one more move for a right-handed outfield bat. So they're going to add a little more salary to this, but I think they're kind of at capacity. And then Willy Adames is also a free agent at the end of the year. So yeah, I mean, you're right. It's definitely a possibility, and I'm not high on Orlando Arcia. I know he was an all-star shortstop, but you go look at his second half, you go look at his entire career. I'm not going to just act like he's all of a sudden a really good shortstop just because he had one good half season for the Atlanta Braves. That would be foolish. He's definitely the weakest link. And you're probably going to have to upgrade that position. I think the Braves' plan is hang on as long as we can and just hope one of their other a shortstop prospect kind of emerges and then they can shove him in that thing. But if Orlando Arcia has a bad year this year, they're really going, and especially if the Braves don't win the World Series, they are going to have to address the position this offseason. And Willy Adames, if he doesn't get traded and sign an extension, certainly an option.
Hey, certainly an option. We talked about him, you know, before that trade, the Sean Murphy trade. We were talking about Willy Adames, thinking about, you know, Vaughn Grissom, Orlando Arcia. Willy Adames came up, very reliable shortstop, good defense, good bat, you know, fits the kind of timeline the Braves have. He's a young guy, and he would seem seamlessly fit in, at least on the surface from where I sit.
I mean, I'm just thinking about Willy Adames getting put into this lineup, another guy that can hit 30 bombs. You literally have nine guys capable of hitting 30 homers in your lineup. That's just absolutely insane. Coming up after the break, Mark Zeno joins the show. A lot of good stuff to talk about. We're going to start with the Atlanta Falcons and Raheem Morris. Joining us now for the second time on Sports Talk ATL, after a pretty stellar appearance the first time, Mark Zeno, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, stellar is a wide-ranging term that many people can interpret the way they want, but I appreciate you guys having me back.
Yeah, so the last time we were talking, it was all about the Bill Belichick, the hiring. What was your initial reaction when Adam Schefter's tweet actually popped up? Because that's how I saw it. I was literally just scrolling through. It just pops up, and my jaw hit the floor. Not necessarily because I thought it was a bad hire, but just I did not think that Arthur Smith and Rich McKay would basically admit the last 3 years were a waste, go back to Raheem Morris, pass over Bill Belichick. All of it just kind of hit me, and I was like, whoa.
I mean, look, this nothing I'm about to say is any sort of indictment or, you know, judgment on Raheem Morris as a coach. By all accounts, Ra's a great coach, and everybody seems to like him. Everybody seems to think he's a great coach. Does that mean he'll win here? I don't know the answer to that yet. I mean, you know, as I said repeatedly last time I was here, if you don't get the quarterback right, guess what? You're going to struggle. So this isn't anything about Raheem Morris. My issue has been with the process. My issue has been with the process the entire time. Hence why when we went to the Arthur Smith fired press conference, I was probing and asking continual questions about who the hell makes decisions around here and what is the decision-making process so I can understand and better try to at least, you know, figure out how decisions are made. And, you know, it's incredibly telling to me that the press release that came out with Raheem Morris, after announcing Raheem Morris as the hire, the second line of the press release read that both Terry Fontenot and Raheem Morris will report to Arthur Blank directly. Not a recap of his past, not a recap of his time in Atlanta, not anything about what he accomplished in LA prior to being hired here. That was the second line of the press conference, of the press release, rather. And it's just like, what dimension have we moved into here where that becomes the second most important piece of news when hiring a new coach, and then buried at the very bottom, the reiteration of the fact that Rich McKay is no longer part of day-to-day operations of football, which is something we were told several years ago, which is something we were untold at the press conference, that he was back in day-to-day operations. Now he's back out again. I mean, again, what is the process here, and how are decisions made? Because now, for the second time in a three-year span, from the outside looking in, the owner has injected himself into a decision, okay, and tried to make it go his way, and it's gone horribly sideways. The first time with Deshaun Watson, now with Bill Belichick. And look, for a guy and an organization that preaches so much about collaboration, decisions, we collaborate, it's a whole group of people, it's always a group of people together. The fact that Arthur Blank met with Bill Belichick on a boat by himself, which again, wasn't supposed to get out, but it did, so we all have that information now, it's very telling that he circumvented the collaborative process. And oh, by the way, he has a right to do all this. He's the owner. Do whatever the hell you want. Guys, I say this repeatedly. What's the point of having F you money if you never tell anybody, F you, I'm doing what I want, right? So when you're the guy, you're the guy. He can do whatever he wants. That's fine. But that doesn't mean I can't critique the process. So I say all that because, again, he circumvented this collaborative process to meet with him on a boat. And at that point in time is, nope, you can't interview our assistants. Nope, you can't interview our assistants. We're denying you guys access. Met with him on the boat. Oh. Now you can take our assistance. We don't care. Then we had the second interview with everybody, la-di-da-di, everybody, right? And everybody thought after the second interview, it was a fait accompli that Bill Belichick was getting hired because you connected all those dots. Okay, Belichick's going to bring in his own staff, doesn't need any of the assistance. This is what it all is. And then we waited and we waited and we waited and we waited. And in reality, Bill Belichick is one of the coaches you could have hired because he is not under contract. He was a free agent. He was let go by the Patriots, right? So there was no contract that they had to circumvent. It's only guys who are under contract you couldn't interview till that Monday, January 22nd. So they could have hired him at any time, and they didn't. Now, I understand they had to satisfy the Rooney Rule. Some of the guys that they were interviewing were already under contract, so they had to wait. But again, if he didn't get hired by that Tuesday or that Wednesday, you were like, whoa, something's up here. Something's up. And that's when when it came out, I kind of tweeted, it looked like the idea that Arthur Blank and Rich McKay couldn't come to an agreement about how to get Bill Belichick in this whole thing. I don't know why they keep trying to circumvent that Rich McKay is not part of this process. We all know that he is. Like, you can't keep telling, you know, your kids that there's no junk food in the cabinet, but they continually see you eating cookies. Like, you just, it's not going to go over well. You know, and so I, whatever the decision-making process was, all I know is this. for a guy who openly lusted after Bill Belichick the way he did, for it not to go down that way, tells us that, as other people reported, more, you know, notable and verifiable people than me, internal persuasion. Well, who's the internal persuasion? It's the freaking boss. Nobody internally persuaded him to go meet with Bill Belichick on the boat. He did it on his own. So either he does things on his own, or he's internally persuaded by whom? His right-hand man. Because it's weird to me, again, let's put this all back together. It's weird to me that the guy who's nuts you clipped in the press conference firing Arthur Smith, Terry Fontenot, who wasn't important enough to be there, had that much influence on the owner to make him do something different. And again, not a shot at Terry. I love Terry. I think the world of him. I think he's an excellent, excellent, you know, player personnel and scout. I think he would be a great GM if he had the GM authority that most GMs have, but he doesn't. Not a reflection on him. I think the world of him, and I'll tell him to his face when I see him. And oh, by the way, you want to know the ultimate slap in the face to everybody, and the slap in the face to everybody's intelligence, guys, is this. Arthur Smith got fired. It was Arthur Blank and Rich McKay. We all wondered where Terry Fontenot is. How much do you want to bet me at the hiring press conference on Monday for Raheem Morris? It's Arthur Blank and Terry Fontenot, and Rich McKay is now not in the room because under the guise of Rich McKay doesn't work in football operations anymore.
Like, yeah, they're treating us like we're dumb. I mean, I don't know. Some fans are like, they were rejoicing on social media about that little clipping you're talking about. And me and Chase are sitting here texting each other and asking, does anybody actually believe this? Are you guys dumb enough to actually believe this? We've done this same song and dance. And me and Chase got ridiculed on YouTube for kind of bashing the Raheem Morris hire. And no, it feels like nobody can compartmentalize the fact that the process was incredibly flawed. It was an absolute clown show. We were the one team who was constantly in headlines for all the wrong reasons, only to end up with a guy in Raheem Morris that we could have had 3 years ago. Now, with that being said, I think the 3 years he spent in Los Angeles under Sean McVay were so much more valuable than any stop before then. So I do want to say he's probably a different guy today. You'd be a fool to think he isn't a different guy today than he was 3 years ago in that 2021 interview. But the fact remains that Arthur Blank and Rich McKay were treating us like we're dumb, like we don't know exactly what's going on. And what the worst part about it is, it worked to a certain extent, at least on social media.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm with you. For me, the process is at best discombobulated. At worst, it's utter chaos, and they're shooting from the hip on everything. So that's my issue with the whole thing. It's not about Raheem.
I don't remember exactly who said it, but somebody came out. Oh, it was Zach Klein. Zach Klein, Atlanta beat writer, basically came out and said on a podcast that Arthur Blank, was panicking about it. And I don't know how true that was, but I don't think it's, a coincidence, that as soon as the Raheem Morris hire was made, that Brett Uecks or whoever it was came out on Twitter and basically said he was doing PR work, that Arthur Blank wasn't panicking. If you have to address it like you're saying, Mark, that if they have to address it, we're probably on the right track.
No, I mean, look, and Brett is an ultimate PR professional. He's really good at his job, and he knows, you know, how to present information to the public. That said, again, I'm not saying anything per se he said is untrue. My eyes tell me different. And it's the exact words I said to Arthur Blank and Rich McKay in the press conference. Actions have to match words, and they don't. And that's a problem for me, you know? And so when the actions don't match the words, and then you have to put it in a press release.
Yeah, that's just...
That to me is just like, guys, like, did it even need to be said? Like, you told us this before, and then he got back in somehow. So, like, either fix the trap door or just leave the guy inside. I don't understand what the process is.
I don't know how anybody believes anything that the Falcons have said for the last 10, 15 years. I mean, they've been so poorly run. Arthur Blank's so involved. Rich McKay's at the press conference. Everyone gets pissed about the press. The thing is, their reactions to like what people are saying on Twitter is almost even more embarrassing than anything. I think that's the most embarrassing part. Like, they shouldn't be really concerned about what we think. We're fans. We're idiots. Now, we might be smarter than this group of guys, but they shouldn't be thinking that. Because we don't really know what should be going on and what decisions should be made. And the fact that they're swayed by people that might be saying, fans don't think Bill Belichick's a good head coach. Our fans don't think this. But yada, yada, yada. I think that's the most embarrassing part, is that they're obviously being reactionary to what other people are saying. And that's absolutely crazy to me. Coming up after the break, we will continue this conversation. I want to get into the good sides of Raheem Morris, though. Raheem Morris is the next head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. And frankly, guys, I think we could sit here all day talking about the process of Rich McKay and Arthur Blank, but I don't want to bog it down with negativity the entire show. I do want to talk about the good aspects of Raheem. And Mark, we can start off with you. I think the biggest thing about Raheem was his capability of being able to bring in a good staff and possibly impact free agency. We now know what his staff looks like. What are your thoughts on that, especially the hiring of Zach Robinson over from the Rams?
I mean, look, you know, I think, again, when it comes to the Rams and what they accomplished this year, it's rather surprising. I mean, they were a team that I didn't think was going to be as bad as many forecasted as a 4-5 win team. I never thought they were a playoff team. I thought they were somewhere in the middle, like a 6 or 7 win team. And so I was kind of surprised to see how well they did. And look, you know, when you have a quarterback like Matt Stafford and then you add in a couple of pieces like Melik Aliki Mukka and what's the name of that guy? You know,
Nakua.
I call him Melik. you know, but when you get that kind of receiver in there that changes the game along with Cooper Kupp, you know, and they finally found a running game, you know, the pieces came in for it to work for Sean McVay's offense. I think we get over enamored with the tree. You know, like the tree nowadays isn't what it used to be. Like when you came from a Bill Walsh tree, when you came from a Bill Parcells tree, like when I was growing up, when I was younger, those coaches, I think those trees matter. Now, because coaches move so quickly and they get hired and fired so quickly, I don't know if the tree matters as much. I think sometimes you just get a lot of faulty branches that do or don't work out. So the fact that he came from a McVay tree doesn't, for me, carry as much weight as it does for some other people. I think that's just a fancy thing to say to make it sound cool, like you know what you're talking about a coach, when really, you know, 9 out of 10 people could not know anything about the scheme that McVay or Zach Robinson is going to run. So does it fit the personnel? Like, I think offensively, as long as they get the quarterback right, they're going to be around a 500 team, maybe even above, because the offense is legit and it's there. The players are legit and it's there. What does the offensive line look like? Because they still are running a very similar outside zone scheme, which is what McVay and Robinson run. I think, you know, the offensive line may be a weak point or could be a strong point, depending on what they do. I think there's some upgrades that are needed there. My biggest concern, guys, believe it or not, is the defense. You're not running Ryan Nielsen's defense anymore at all. Raheem's defense and Ryan's defense are not the same. Like, yes, Grady transfers over. Yes, AJ transfers over. You know, Jesse Bates is going to be fine. What's the linebacking core going to look like? You know, do you still have Calais Campbell coming back? You know,
Bud Dupree.
Yeah. Does he fit in the scheme? Like,
they don't have a second safety.
The reason you were able to get by with such piss poor, crappy, just filling, I don't even want to curse, but a lot of bad words about quarterback play and offense. The reason why is because your defense was really good. And again, I looked this up. This is one of the top 10 defenses in the last 50 years of Atlanta Falcons football, like statistically, which, you know, doesn't sound like it should have been, but it was. Yeah. So with the defense looking different, great. The offense could score 24 points a game. If the defense is giving up 25, we're still on the negative end of this thing. So I don't know that we assume the defense is going to transfer. That's more of my concern than anything else. What is the defense going to look like? Because the Rams defense this year was meh.
I mean, you go back and look at Raheem Morris. He was there for 3 years. And even when they had all that talent with Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, they won a Super Bowl. They were the 17th ranked defense. Now they stepped up during the playoffs. They're 18th 2 years ago, and they're 20th this year. So everyone acting like Raheem Morris, like that's not what I expect from Raheem Morris to be this great defensive guru. I'm expecting the CEO thing. Jimmy Lake wasn't exactly the sexiest hire to be the DC. Now they keep Gray. Maybe all three of those guys can combine to do something, but I'm with you. I mean, the talent on the defensive side of the ball is still lacking. When you go to a new scheme, it's going to have an impact. We'll see what they do in free agency, but I totally am with you. If you can get the quarterback situation right offensively, I think Robinson, these weapons, and then maybe they add another wide receiver, they're just fine. Defensively, you got a lot of holes. You got a lot of guys that are leaving that had big impacts in Campbell and Bud Dupree, especially when you talk about the getting pressure, because those guys don't come back. You quite literally don't have an edge room. You have AK-47 and nothing else.
Yeah.
And I'm going to push back. I held my tongue long enough. Okay. I held my tongue long enough because I'm going to paint a more optimistic picture. We don't have to talk about the Sean McVay tree, we talk about the Kyle Shanahan tree. And it's not necessarily that you're there long enough. It's just that you're implementing very similar schemes. And to that point, I would say name one failure of an offensive-minded head coach or offensive coordinator that has come from that Kyle Shanahan tree.
I agree. The Shanahan tree, the Shanahan tree
is just about as great as any tree there's ever been in terms of success on offensive side of the football. Winning Super Bowls. All right, think on that. Let me go back.
Caveated it on the offensive side of the ball. Okay.
I agree with the quarterback situation. I don't care if Jesus Christ himself was the head coach of this football team.
Let me ask you a question. Let's talk about the tree here for a second.
Okay.
Bobby Slowick, right? If Brock Purdy is on the Houston Texans this year, are they a playoff team?
All you could do is work with what you got, Zena.
I think there's, when you get
Matt LaFleur, Jordan Love.
All right. Yeah.
We had big questions about Tua before Mike McDaniel got there.
We did.
I just think the quarterback position is very important. Okay. Zach Robinson's not going to work out with Desmond Ridder. We would all think Zach Robinson's a joke if he has Desmond Ridder. I think that's a fair point.
You're not wrong on that. I don't think you're wrong. But it boils back to who's going to be their quarterback this year What does that look like? And, oh, by the way, if you're not going to go with a veteran guy, and, I mean, you know,
quarterback talk, because I want to actually talk about that next. Because I do.
All right, let me continue painting the optimistic picture. Okay, we got 25 million in cap space, can grow up to 40. That's plenty to spend on the defense side of the ball. Raheem Morris learned under Quinn 4-3. Also, Vic Fangio, two different kinds of defenses. Hopefully, some of that, you know, flexibility, versatility transfers over. I don't think it's as dire as Chase and Zeno were painting it.
I do want to talk about this quarterback situation coming up after the break. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter who the head coach of the Falcons is if they do not get the quarterback situation right. And Alex, we've talked about it a few times over the last several weeks that, you know, a couple months ago maybe, it looked like the Falcons were going to have their chance to get a Jaden Daniels, get one of these top quarterbacks, depending on their draft pick. Now they get in the eighth spot again. That now looks far-fetched because it looks like for sure it's going to go quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. I think we would all be shocked if it didn't. And then you look at the free agency thing. Baker Mayfield probably, I would assume, probably goes back to the Bucs. Kirk Cousins, do you really want to commit $90 million to him after an Achilles injury? And then it's like Justin Fields, or what are we talking about here? J.J. McCarthy and Desmond Ridder figuring it out, competing for the job? I mean, it's not – or Russell Wilson? I mean, I hate to be a Debbie Downer on the show at all times when it comes to the Falcons, but it does not look great.
The forecast on these things, as you sit here in the beginning of February, will look dynamically different as you sit here at the beginning of April, and then you sit there a week before the draft, right? Like – this stuff is so fluid, it always changes. You have a major move in free agency to go through. Look, there's only one way to address the quarterback position via the draft, and that is you go and get the guy you want as high as humanly possible, right? Like, there's no such thing as trading back for your quarterback of the future. That's not what happens. That's not a good philosophy, right? It's not like, hey, I'm going to wait to ask the third hottest girl to the prom on the off chance that she falls to me. No, like that's a bad philosophy to take during quarterbacks. As a Giants fan, I didn't like the Daniel Jones pick, but I at least agreed with the philosophy. The Giants picked at 6. He was there. He was available. Go get your guy as soon as you possibly can. So if the Falcons have designs on a quarterback and they want to move heaven and earth to go get one, then I support that. I don't care what you give up. Go get your guy, right? If you want a franchise quarterback, most of them come in the first round nowadays. That's what you want to do. I would love Kirk Cousins here. I'll always be a Kirk defender. I'm not here for Kirk Cousins bashing. All of you people who bash him for years, you're idiots. You just don't know what you're watching. You know, you could argue Kirk in that sense is very similar to Matt. Like, he may never have been the solution, but he was most definitively not the problem. And Kirk Cousins will not be the problem here if they don't win. So from that standpoint, I would support that. I think Wilson, I'm a little bit more iffy on. I think there's a lot of stuff that comes with that. So I don't know what else they do, honestly. I mean, could they sit at 8 again or 10? Where are they drafting? I forget what number they're drafting.
They're drafting 8. And it looks like
drafting 8? That's weird.
Yeah, It's remarkably consistent. If I had to tell you, though, you know, you're talking about it, let's say the Falcons fall in love with one of these prospects that's not the Jaden Daniels. Let's say they go quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. So you got McCarthy, Penix, and Bo Nix as basically your next tier of quarterbacks. And you're sitting there at eight, and let's say you do like a guy like McCarthy. You do like a guy. Which one of those three? Because I think if you like one of them and you think they're going to go in the first round, you got to take them at eight, right? Like you just said.
I don't know if he's a first-round quarterback, but I would roll the dice on Penix. I know this particular scouting staff, at least when Arthur Smith was here, is very, very fond of Michael Penix. Medicals aside, I mean, look, there were medicals on Drew Brees that were bad. It's the reason why Nick Saban didn't stay in Miami and why the Dolphins were floundered for years and the Saints went on to win a Super Bowl. I mean, you know, it's that simple. So medicals be damned to a certain extent, but it's a roll of the dice. You know, I'll say this much, too, when it comes to it. The Justin Fields thing. Here's what I won't wrap my head around. And although, you know, in jest, I say it's the Falcons, so it shouldn't surprise me. If Terry Fontenot didn't think enough of him to draft him, why would he come back and get him now when there's not enough data points to say, hey, we got it wrong? Like, again, if you didn't ask the girl to the prom, why are you going to ask her to marry you? I mean, that's essentially the best analogy I can come up with. Like, if you wasn't good enough to draft him, then why is he good enough to take after 3 years of me? You know, so then again, the Falcons had a chance to hire Raheem Morris 3 years
ago. Just about to say that.
And didn't, and then brought him back. So it would kind of be on brand for them to bring back a guy that they didn't draft and had the opportunity to throw balls to a guy who doesn't really catch all that many.
Think about I know it's a little bit different because Deshaun Watson's obviously a higher prospect, but the hometown kid. I mean, Arthur Blank, we've seen him meddle in these decisions before. He's still involved. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they're reporting to him. We know that Arthur Blank's still involved. I mean, does he meddle in this situation again and say, oh, Justin Fields, hometown kid, very similar. I mean, I'm just saying like, oh, let's go get our guy. That's exciting. And trust me, you got to think about the other aspect of this. There's no butts in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It is a ghost town on Sundays. It's more like a church than a football game. And Justin Fields at least puts fans in seats. Now, it may not be a full stadium, but at least there'll be someone there watching.
I'm only going to say this to be a troll. Lamar Jackson would have put butts in seats.
Let's get off of that before I get riled up. I said I was trolling. But yesterday I said to Chase that, you know, every team overdrafts a quarterback until he becomes a franchise guy. You remember that guy, Patrick Mahomes, when the Chiefs took him years ago? Everybody was like, you guys took that guy then? You traded up to get that guy? Everybody overdrafts a quarterback, unless it's the Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow. Everybody gets that. But everybody ends up overdrafting a quarterback until he becomes the guy. So no matter who, if the Falcons take a guy at eight, it's going to be met with criticism. There's no doubt about that.
Let me add one more thing on the Justin Fields thing. If you continue to use the Shanahan-McVay tree, like, here's the thing. Brock Purdy, really accurate passer. Jordan Love, really accurate passer. Matt Stafford, really accurate passer. Do you use that word, that phrase, really accurate passer, to describe Justin Fields?
No.
I mean, so the idea that people want him here, I don't know if it's a best fit for the scheme that Zach Robinson, a la Sean McVay, a la Kyle Shanahan, is going to run.
I could say the same thing about Russell Wilson. In an ideal world, you take a guy like J.J. McCarthy. To me, he's the most attractive. He's young. I don't think Michigan's offense accentuated what he did well. And then you also sign a guy like Kirk Cousins so that J.J. McCarthy actually has somebody to mentor him. I don't think you can draft J.J. McCarthy and expect him to do well immediately. I don't think you can do that with any of the guys outside of Caleb Williams or Drake May. That includes Jaden Daniels. I think signing a free agent and drafting a quarterback has got to be the avenue the Falcons take because there isn't going to be an opportunity to find a day one starter in the draft.
I don't think that Desmond Ridder is off the roster next year.
Neither do I.
I mean, he's also not going to be the third quarter. He's not going to be Logan Woods.
That's fair.
So,
he's a good backup. I mean, we've been saying it for weeks.
Here's the rub, guys, because we could really literally be back right where we started. You take a rookie in the draft and he doesn't do well. What are we going back to? Desmond Ridder.
The GOAT. Hey, man. The Desmond Ridder stands are still alive, and they're still somehow kicking. I've been seeing them on Twitter. I don't know how they're still kicking. It's crazy. Coming up after the break, we're going to switch gears here a little bit. We're going to talk about Trae Young. How long is he going to remain in Atlanta? Trae Young has been snubbed from the All-Star game yet again, and maybe he gets in on an injury thing, but just the fact that he isn't already assumed after averaging 27-11, I think is more of just a stain on this entire Hawks organization than it really is on him. And if I'm Trae Young, and aside from just not being able to win and the fact that they can't build a team around you, all the hate that he gets and the criticism that I believe it to be unfounded has to be frustrating. And I just don't see a situation because the Hawks aren't close to figuring this thing out. They don't have the people in the building to figure it out, even if they were close to figure it out. I do not see a situation. And I said this last year and people after me, Trae Young's going to get traded. And it just seems like it's inevitable. Like it might wait to the offseason. I doubt he's going to push something here. But this offseason, I'm expecting something firmly to come out from his camp. Like, well, we need to work something out, or you need to do this, or we need or trade me.
Yeah, I don't. If Trae is on the roster the first game of next year, I'd be fairly surprised. This team is a functionally flawed basketball team from top to bottom. And Trae in and of itself is not enough to fix things. And I think, honestly, I think the window to trade him is closed. I don't know that there's a lot of dance partners out there for him, at least teams that, you know, would want him that are title contenders, right? Like, does Trae have a no trade clause or no? Did he get that in his contract?
I don't believe so.
I don't think he did.
I'm sure he's ready to go.
I mean,
as long as to someone that's half decent.
Well, that limits the number of teams because there's only like, you know, 20% of the league that's half that's half decent, right? I think in general, you know, the problem here is that you got a front office that is another front office that is just like, how the hell are decisions made around here? Who the hell is in charge? Who's doing what? Who's in charge of what? I mean, when the owner has to come out that vociferously and defend the hiring of his son, it's a bad, I don't know what the, it's
embarrassing.
Well, it's a bad look, right? I mean, that's the thing, Alex. It's just a bad look. Like, I don't know if it's factual or not. But the fact that he had to go to the hills so hard for his own kid speaks a little bit of volumes. Like, I get it. You're a dad. I'm a dad. You know, I defend my kid too. But in a world that's supposed to be a theoretical meritocracy, where you're supposed to have a job because you've earned it, because you have done things that have been successful before, when you've given somebody something that they haven't, it begs the question. Now, if they were winning, no one would be begging the question. Like, hey, how smart is your kid? Your kid's the smartest damn kid in all the NBA. Wonderful. Not working. So now we question why your kid got a job that he probably didn't deserve. And even to a certain extent, I like Landry Fields. Kind of meteoric rise for a guy who's never a GM to get to the top of being a GM, right? Like, how did we get here? Where, I mean, it's like the United States government. So many unqualified people are in charge.
I said it the other day that it's pretty wild how opposite ran the Atlanta Braves and the Atlanta Hawks and Falcons are. You want to see how an organization is supposed to be ran top to bottom. Terry McGuirk and Liberty Media give Alex Anthopoulos all the tools he needs, and then he delegates from there. He doesn't stick his nose in the coaching staff and the training staff and vice versa. He doesn't go up to the players and suggest things because he knows where his knowledge ends and where his area of expertise ends. And that doesn't exist with the Atlanta Hawks or the Atlanta Falcons. Now, I think a lot of people who are going to watch this are going to look at us and go, why do you guys, you're trying to get rid of Trae Young? Listen, Trae Young, I'm going to go as far to say he's the best Atlanta Hawks player in franchise history. He's better than Wilt. I'm just saying we're all just addressing the elephant in the room that if we want what's best for Trae Young, it's not in Atlanta. If you were Trae Young, you wouldn't want to be in Atlanta either because it's a total crap show from top to bottom. Nothing is ran correctly. It's an absolute, and it, again, it all starts with where Zeno is going. It starts at the top with Tony Ressler and Arthur Blank.
Guys, but like, again, talk about being fundamentally flawed here. Okay, just go to defensive efficiency rating. Minnesota,
thing I've ever seen, man.
Playoff team, Cleveland, playoff team, Orlando, playoff team, OKC, playoff team, Boston, Houston, New York, Clippers, Philadelphia. These are all playoff teams. They play defense. There's a couple of bad teams up there. Memphis is a good defense team, but they stink offensively. You know, Miami is a good defense team. They stink offensively. But, you know, Denver's in the top 12. These are all playoff teams, guys. Like, I get scoring is important, but if you play zero, and I mean zero defense, like, let's go look at the bottom here. Charlotte, not a playoff team. Detroit, Atlanta, Washington, San Antonio. These are not playoff teams because they're not good. So, you know, there's nothing about this team that's constructed. And oh, by the way, you know, you had a coach in here, in Mike Budenholzer, who emphasized defense, and it was probably the best three-year span that you had since Dominique Wilkins was in uniform because they played defense. And since you got rid of the guy, you haven't played a lick of it, and you haven't even gotten past the first round ever, with the exception of one lucky, you know, series against the 76ers, which, again, I'll still maintain was the worst thing to happen to this franchise in the last 20 years.
Yeah, I agree.
We all agree there.
What's funny about the owners, and we have to go to break in a second, but it is that everyone wants a billionaire owner that will shell out cash until they start meddling in business decisions. Liberty Media, not really involved, wasn't always the richest team. But you see how who's more well-run. Coming up after the break, Alabama, this gambling thing, we have to talk about it real quick. With gambling making its way into the sports world, we are going to hear some crazy stories, and we're just getting started. I mean, we've already heard some. I mean, obviously, Falcons fans know about Calvin Ridley. Kayshawn Boutte hits home-to-home, LSU Tiger baby, making 8,900 bets or whatever he did. But this is by far the stupidest one I have heard to date, and it goes back to Bama's baseball coach who was suspended, fired, whatever, for importantly illegal gambling activities. It turns out he was texting insider information on his baseball team to a buddy to make bets in Vegas. He tried to do it at the MGM Grand, tried to do 100K. They limited it to 15K because they were like, who bets 100K on a college baseball game? Pretty suspicious activity. Well, this is where it gets stupid. He says, no, you don't get it. Like, you don't know what I know. Like, basically saying, hey, I got insider info. Beyond this, he shows the actual text from the Alabama baseball coach that says this starting pitcher isn't pitching. And he was saying, like, hey, I know the starter's not pitching. LSU's definitely going to win. He's saying all this to basically guys that are there that are almost like cops. I mean, it's like a drug dealer saying, hey, I got a kilo of crack in my car to a cop. Yeah. And I don't know what, like, the Alabama baseball coach has to be like sitting here today. Like, you are such an idiot.
Excuse me, officer. I told my prostitute to meet me here in the police station. Has Destiny shown up yet? did she come? I'm looking for Destiny. Here's her phone number right here. I'm going to pay her for sex after this. Did she come through? Yeah, that's the equivalent of what. Guys, I mean, this story actually helps sports gambling, right? Because, look, there's every headline that comes out there, right, about something that's nefarious going on in sports betting. And every headline writer writes this salacious headline about, and, you know, skewing towards gambling is the problem. Gambling is the problem. No, gambling is not the problem. Sports, legalizing sports gambling is not the problem. Okay. There are idiots who are the problem who will abuse it. Just the same thing with alcohol, the same thing with driving too fast, whatever it may be. The idiots abuse the system. And the guardrails are there in sports betting to not let people freely take advantage of it. They have always been there. They will always be there. And the idea, you're right, that it's the same thing when you do it online. There's a red flag that goes up when one account tries to do something that is way off the reservation that nobody, everybody in sports betting knows the pros. They know who the smart guys are. They know who the sharps are. They know the guys who wager big money. And oh, by the way, for future reference, Mattress Mac does not count. Mattress Mac is a public schmuck that books are gladly willing to take his money because they take more of it than anything else. Just wanted to get that out there. I had somebody in Atlanta radio tell me, well, Mattress Mac moves lines. No, he does not.
No. They will take any bet of his because it's all betting with his heart and stuff like that.
He's a public schmuck. So, granted, a rich public schmuck, something I'm not. I'd like to be a rich public schmuck at some point in time, but won't get there. So the point is that the guardrails are there in sports betting, and they're always going to be there. It's one of the safer industries out there.
Yeah, the real problem is that it's not legalized. So you got people who bet on illegal books without money that they have, whereas, like, you go and bet at the MGM Grand, you have to have that money on hand. That's where the real issues, you know, stem from, where you're gambling money that you don't have. That's where the real issues are. And, hey, Georgia, we might be knocking on the door of getting it here.
Not. No, you're not.
I don't think it's going to pass through the House. But if it does come down to a Georgia vote, it'll be the first time I've voted in quite some time.
It's not going to pass through the House. Look, I'll say this and I'll say it repeatedly. Despite his public fence sitting on the issue, Governor Kemp does not want legalized sports betting. He's had a Republican House and a Republican Senate for his 8 years of his term, and never once has it even come close because the governor doesn't want it.
It sucks, but because we need it. That wraps up our show for this evening. Thank you, Mark Zeno, for joining us. We will be back with you guys next week.